The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. Violent crime continues sweeping across America, and nothing seems to be halting the trend. Oh, but we don't know why. We don't understand why crime is increasing at a rate much faster than population today. We don't seem to understand any cause and effect relationship between the way people live their private lives, between child-rearing methods, lack of authority and respect for authority and education, the hollowness and the empty ceremony of many church pulpits, the unbelievable violence, the insatiable desire for violence in entertainment, so-called, in motion pictures that are filled with blood and gore, bullets and bombs, flying maimed bits and pieces of bodies. And then you have to throw in the violence of television and the fact that the average student or pupil who begins at the first grade has already sat hunchback, stoop-shouldered, or maybe lying on the floor or in some ridiculous position in the chair with his little body as well as his little mind distorted and perverted by what he sees, whether it's cartoons or old motion pictures or whatnot, for a period of time that they say, actually these are FCC statistics, that actually is more than the entire formal 12 years of education the average school child will receive. He's already seen enough television to more than equal that. Then we look around and we wonder why all the senseless violence today. Until recently, the FBI's Uniform Crime Reports has been the only yardstick available to measure the growth of lawlessness, but there are many other methods of gauging it these days, private and public, city, state, county. They all keep records. 10 years and at least $200 billion after law and order became a major public preoccupation, after it became a major part of party slogans to propel presidents into office who promised law and order and to deal with crime, 10 years and $200 billion later, crime is still sharply on the increase. Oh, maybe the burning of whole cities, such as back in the mid-60s when in 65 the Watts riot occurred, and on through the mid-60s where at one time 68 American cities were burning. Maybe that kind of senseless urban riots have subsided. Some of the campus riots have subsided, but these are in turn canceled out by total failures in other areas. Now more and more it's mass murder. Ridiculous, freaked-out, hophead snipers going along streets killing unfortunate victims they never saw before. Don't know, for no reason whatsoever. But that's all right. The guy was probably disturbed. They'll probably put him on the funny farm, show him how to grow radishes. Probably give him a tour around the ranch and teach him to ride a horse. Nothing really wrong with him. You look back into the history of some of these characters, you find they began on marijuana, and then they went to all of the other stuff and finally ended up on heroin. And then you hear all the potheads telling you marijuana is never addictive. It doesn't lead toward the stronger stuff. It's an absolute lie. They're trying to kid you that if you chance on marijuana in a nice little private petting party someplace because the rest of the gang is doing it after the high school graduation or something, when you first take your first drop of LSD or your first, as they say, toke on a reef or your first pull on a joint, whatever else they call it. There's no harm in that. There's no danger in it. I read in the paper this morning about a kid that used an electric cord to hang himself in jail who left a note to all other teenagers. It's true. Marijuana does lead to the harder stuff. I started with marijuana. I went from that to Benny's and Red's and all the other stuff that I was dropping, and finally I got my life all messed up. Now I'm in jail on some terrible charge. He decided to take his own life, and in the act, to leave a warning to teenagers. Well, his life was probably spent in vain, because that warning isn't going to do one thing, because millions upon millions will refuse to believe it. We can't seem to see cause and effect. I don't go to movies very often. I guess I've gone to two or three in about the past 4 or 5 years. Made a terrible mistake and went to one the other night. Took my three boys and a friend of theirs. Actually, a nephew, come to think of it. So it was all a family situation. We thought this was going to be a hilarious comedy of some kind. But unfortunately, the comedian pair had done another movie some years earlier that was supposed to be a spoof on the American military during Korea. Now, I'd seen the stupid thing advertised for years and, of course, had deliberately avoided going to see it as I have almost 100% of all the others. But apparently the way they set this thing up, you had to see that one to see the one you went to see. And I really wish, like everything now, that I'd gotten up to walk out because I'd have felt so much better the next day or two. The only problem is, if I had, I wouldn't have it to gripe about on the program. So maybe there is some benefit in it after all, but I deeply resented that filthy, rotten piece of whatever people call it, it wasn't entertainment, that alleged that the American doctors in hospital tents in Korea were a group of crass, filthy-mouthed, sex fiends, sadists, and almost, well, you don't want to say bestial, because I don't want to do that much harm or danger or do that much dirt to the animals. I don't think the human beings act like animals. I don't think they're capable of it, because most animals don't conduct themselves that way. But that was one of the filthiest movies I've ever seen. And I was kind of sounding off about it in my office to a couple of aides recently. And I won't reveal any names so nobody gets his feelings hurt, but one of them said, hey, that's mild. That's one of the real mild ones. Well, I have to confess, it said PG. Now, I saw a lot of little kids running around in there. You know what PG means? PG is just some means by which the motion picture industry and those who rate them can get off the hook to avoid any kind of suits. So they can tell parents if their kids come home looking moon-eyed and climb a tree and bay at the moon or go kill somebody or grab a gun and shoot a cop or whatever it is, they get an idea from some of these movies that require, quote, parental guidance, end quote, that at least they're off the hook because they warned you in advance. Most people think PG is just slightly a little risque, maybe in one or two scenes. No, not this one. This one looks like wading in a cesspool all the way to the garbage pit on the way to the public dump. This one was like, you know, walking down a filthy, dirty skid row area, looking at about 100,000 open chests, listening to the giggles and the screams of about 16 bawdy houses, listening to all the evil words that you could find out of any public restroom or men's locker room in the YMCA. Excuse me, I didn't mean to say YMCA. Well, maybe I should, come to think of it. But this was not only irreverent as a motion picture, it was irrelevant. Now, I resent the combination of those two, because it had no plot. It didn't go anywhere. It didn't say anything. It was totally destructive, in the sense that all it did was to completely undermine not only the entirety of the military and its very reason for being, but it undermined the medical corps, the hospital corps, doctors and nurses and so on in particular, by showing what went on over the bloodied corpses or the open chests of young American boys who had been wounded in battle. And I deeply resented those scenes. I really did. It made me so furious that I sat there just trembling with rage as I watched this parade of bodies that would show scene after scene after scene. The characters, the slope heads that designed that thing had to be from Inner Sanctum or outer space. Because it showed these doctors presiding over the open, bloody chests of dozens of victims, one after another. They're making jokes. They're talking in the most irrelevant and, as I said, irreverent language. They got blood all the way up to their elbows. And all kinds of interplay with nurses and so on going on. I don't know what in the world families, middle-aged, who lost sons on the operating tables behind the lines in Korea thought of that film. I don't know what the families of the tens of thousands of young American boys who died and whose bones are strewn on the icy, frozen ridges of Korea right this minute, or who rotted away long ago in the rice paddies, thought of that film. I don't know what hospital corpsmen and doctors and nurses who actually were there and lived through that era of time in Korea thought of that film. I wasn't on the actual land surface of Korea. The closest I got to it was to see some huge snow-covered mountains over there in the distance. They didn't let aircraft carriers get in too close, but I was at least over there close enough to see and talk to and experience a little bit secondhand some of what was going on. We sent strikes off the aircraft sometimes several times a day, and I was in the military service during the Korean War, and I'm at least here to tell you that even though the military service has degenerated fantastically from that time to this, and where the kind of discipline that I knew, has, which I already thought was eroding, incidentally, has all but become a thing of the past and a thing of history. I'm here to tell you that the movies, so far as I could ever remotely tell from anybody and everybody that I have known, including hospital corpsmen and people in the medical profession in the military during the Korean War, was a total rotten lie. Without basis in fact, without any redeeming social entertaining value, without any basis in truth whatsoever. And I deeply resented it, not only from the standpoint that it was not entertainment, but it was untruthful, and it was totally destructive of a very important part of the military, that of hospital corpsmen and doctors and so on, laboring, presumably, we hope, to save patients' lives. Now, somebody's going to come back and say, well, yes, but it portrayed them as excellent doctors. Well, I would have to answer, well, yes, but all that is rather lost on you, because you can't really find any place in the motion picture where you feel proud about what is happening. It was really incredible. Well, I don't want to go on and on about that, except to say that I'm very thankful that I go to very, very few, and I'm going to insist upon myself going to fewer now in the future and trying to be far more selective. I think from now on the word, or the letters PG, must mean something other than parental guidance. It's got to mean pure garbage to me, and I think I'll stay away from it. Although garbage can't be pure, maybe it should mean putrid garbage. Maybe that's closer. I guess what that means is you parents are supposed to go to those things. Be sure and take a plastic bag with you so you don't, you know, foul up the theater any more than there already is. And then find out if it's worthwhile letting your kids go to see it. Really, in one sense of the word, as parents, we've got to begin protecting our children from society. Maybe people can argue, well, yeah, but what kind of language did you use as a young boy? Did they use any language in there you didn't understand? That's a cop-out, and it's beside the point. Just because someone else does it or because somebody else used to do it doesn't make it right. Two wrongs do not make a right, and there is the potential and the possibility for change for the better if human beings would learn that lesson. They don't need to show each other everything that goes on. There are some human habits, human acts, that belong in private, that don't belong in public. And the idea that seems to justify some of these people have put together what is called entertainment for the American public is, if it happens, show it. I violently disagree with that precept. And I know, frankly, that the police departments and criminal psychologists and psychiatrists and people who labor with so many thousands upon thousands of Americans who need help in what are called sometimes bridge back programs, who have been involved in drugs and crime and so on, who are trying to sift through the incredible mind-bending morass of twisted mental attitudes as a direct result of the way of the world, of the lack of proper child rearing, of the lack of proper education, the lack of a sound, balanced home with some kind of a father figure, whether you call it socioeconomic or racial or belonging to the ghetto or the product of broken home is, in one sense, irrelevant for the moment. If you talk to these tens of thousands of Americans involved in that kind of activity, trying to help human beings who have gotten completely out of step with anything that could be called civilization, you will find they agree with me. You will find they all agree that there is an easily discernible cause and effect between entertainment, between what people are feeding into their minds, and what people do in their private lives. You will find by the thousands that they agree. And the idea we need university studies that take 10 years and millions of dollars to try to prove there is some relationship between feeding into your mind hundreds upon hundreds of hours of filth, of rot, of slop, of cruddy pollution, of vanity, of murder, of rape, of some of the most lewd and obscene pictures you can imagine, and then wonder why, in a time of unbridled anger, someone freaks out and commits some senseless violent act, and say there isn't any real proof that an avalanche of pornography leads toward rape. There is no real proof that an avalanche of brutality in slow motion with blood clear to your elbows and even twisting the knife for the kick out of it leads toward a slaying in a family. There is no real proof that a kid who has grown up on 15,697 strangulations, 357,000 shootings, 20,000 bombings, 15,627 rapes, 2,635,000 muggings, purse snatchings, bludgeonings, cudgelings, and beatings is going to turn into a violent person when his boss tells him something he doesn't like, or when somebody edges him out in the line, or somebody, you know, runs over his pansy bed, or somebody pushes him off the road in his car, or something else happens he doesn't like. And because we insist there is no cause and effect, we look around in bewilderment and say, now they, whoever they are, got to stop this terrible steep upward trend of crimes of violence. We've got to do something about crime. We like to characterize crime as a cancer, or it's a monster, or it's a wave. No, it isn't either. It's that pimple-faced, scrawny little kid around the corner whose parents don't give a hang and farmed him out to an automatic babysitter all of his life called television, let him cut his teeth on violence, and then wonder what in the world he's doing in the liquor store with that gun pumping .22-caliber bullets into the belly of an old man who's a retired war veteran trying to keep life and limb together in a little shop. No, it's not a cancer. It's a lot of freaked-out kids without proper parental rearing, with no fear and no respect for authority, without proper education, without any of the proper instilling of values of a civilized nation. They have no respect for society, for others, for their elders, for people's property, for each other, and sometimes no respect even for themselves. But still, we wonder. It's a nice posture to think that crime is a cancer, or that crime is a disease, or that criminals are sick. It's a good cop-out for some people. But cause and effect is absolutely unavoidable. Crime has increased more than 2.5 times in our law and order decade. How about that? $200 billion have been spent. 10 years have gone by since it became a huge public issue and government began to jump at the bandstand and talk about law and order, and we got to bring crime down. You want to turn around and say, oh, please, don't get involved again, government. Last time you did, crime went up 2.5 times in the law and order decade. In those years, reported murders, and by the way, there are many that are not reported, believe it or not, yes, even in murder, that's true. But reported murder more than doubled. You know, back then, such a short period of time ago, there were 8,500 Americans dying every year at the hands of murderers. A quarter of those were homicides within the family. You know what it is this year? 19,600. 19,600, almost 20,000 Americans a year are dying at the hands of murderers. Reported robberies, that's theft by violence or threat of violence, went up about 225%. Forcible rape almost tripled, and again, I repeat, all police departments know that the crime statistics are only half. I mean it. I mean the FBI absolutely says it is twice as much as is actually reported. This is about half of what really happens. Forcible rape went up from 17,490, reported, that is, to an estimated 51,000 a year. It's actually over 100,000, police believe. Aggravated assaults jumped from 172,000 in the year to 412,000 in the decade of the expenditure of $200 billion on law and order. Burglary, the most numerous crime index and one of the least oft-reported, incidentally, climbed by more than 250%. And you know, there are some fools around that will tell you it's only better reporting. You know, there are people out of touch with reality, and they maybe are some of the people who are capable of some of these acts, for all I know, because anybody that's that big of a fool, when population increased by 11% in that decade from 63 to 73, crime was up 2.5 times, 250%. Back in 1963, there were 55 police officers killed in the line of duty, some of them summoned to an apartment house where a brawl was allegedly underway and shot while they walked in the door. But in 1973, 131. FBI crime statistics chronically understate the problem. The ratio between reported and unreported crime is going to be a pretty steady one, very likely, so the law and order decade supposedly some kind of a milestone, means that we have come to the point where there is an ever-widening gap between the number of crimes reported and those that are actually committed. Incidentally, I think I told you recently the shocking fact of how few people ever really pay for their crimes. And it is unbelievable when you find that even out of those who do get caught, who do go through the system of the courts, the choked, stagnant, backlogged system of the courts, the system of the courts where, for instance, in Los Angeles, for example, victims of a criminal act in a neighborhood might go to a crowded hall of justice to sit in a sterile, well, if it were sterile, it might be better. I shouldn't say that. I should say just a kind of an empty hallway and some crude wooden benches or chairs, or maybe on the floor, like as not. It's not sterile because of all the cigarette butts, the smoke, and the personal pollution is there. But they wait and they wait and they wait. Sometimes they wait day after day after day, and sometimes it mounts up to about a week. Here's a person that is maybe a small shopkeeper, and they've been beaten and robbed. And maybe the police apprehended the young hoodlum who did it. But he probably lives in the same neighborhood or near enough by. He certainly knows how to find the white-haired old gentleman and his wife again. The same kid is sitting right across the hall with an easy kicking distance of the old gentleman's shins, the chances are, staring at him for the same period of days, maybe making threats. I can tell you of personal cases I know of people at work right here who work in our own television department and elsewhere on the campus who have had circumstances where when the guy was let off, there was a case where a person was jamming a butcher knife into a woman over and over again, and one of our own personnel interrupted the thing, held him there with a BB gun at night because the guy didn't know it was a BB gun. He was arrested for the crime. He was allowed to get off. The woman that he was stabbing, his wife, decided after she was out of the hospital she wouldn't prefer charges. They mended the whole deal up. But, oh, man, oh, boy, the conversation in that crowded elevator when the fellow who did the stabbing managed to get into the elevator with the man who had turned him in. Oh, I'll tell you, that's a kind of a deterrent for crime reporting. Let me tell you that fear of retaliation is a kind of a deterrent to reporting crime, and police know it. It's like the articles. I've never understood it. The article, it says, Miss Jane Doe, you know, 1643 West 62nd Street, 5'2", eyes of blue, hair of brown, so on, whose telephone number is 364-9272 or something like that, incidentally. You know, they give all the descriptions, turned in the license number of the bandits, and the bandits, known as so-and-so and such-and-such, were caught entering this store and were caught by police and so on. They have been released on $250 bail apiece, and their trial is set for so-and-so. And I begin to wonder, what in the world's going to happen to this gal whose full name and address, and I'm not kidding about that because I've seen that in newspapers, name and address of the person, you know, you got to get the facts. So it's all reported so these people can take a gun over there or something and retaliate, which does happen. So it's a deterrent. Well, out of those reported crimes, that's about half of what actually goes on. The police departments over the country, federal, state, county, and local, manage to catch about 1 out of 5. That 1 out of 5 represents an awful lot of people caught or apprehended during the commission of crimes or subsequent to their commission during the year. So that large number represents the total number apprehended for crime. That's 1 out of 5. That's how much they clear. Out of that large number, dividing them up into hundreds, and there are hundreds of thousands, 2 out of every 100 go to jail. People call crime a social mystery. They say, the one sure thing we know about crime is that it's on the rise. Oh, man. I mean, with speeches like that, it's no wonder that, really, we're not making any headway against crime because people refuse to put it right where it belongs, right at the doorstep, right on the shoelaces of parents, right back into the earliest formative years of the people who commit such acts, and at the combination of education, of religion, of society itself in the form of the kind of entertainment we so insatiably and greedily go to see. You wouldn't think of letting your little kid growing up cramming his face full of poison. You're so careful. Well, maybe you're not too careful either, come to think of it, but you should be careful about what you allow the little baby to put in his face, what you allow him to put in his stomach. Because you know that if he gets too much of this or that, or an imbalance of the other thing, or if he gets any poisons in there, he's simply going to kill himself. But it seems to make no difference whatsoever what he puts into his mind. And the mind is where it's at, after all. That is the volition, the will, the character. That's the human computer. That's where the human lives. I mean, we've got these other vital organs that keep us going, heart, lungs, liver, kidneys, and circulatory system, and so on. But don't kid yourself. It's all up there in the mind. That's where it goes on. And you let the eye and the ear take in all that violence and filth and garbage and invective and total contempt for human life and human property, as you see in these wretched, filthy, blood-spattered motion pictures they call entertainment, and you let a person get that, I noticed that you tend to build calluses with the body when you do a certain type of activity. Don't you know you can callus your brain? Don't you know you can take a human sensitivity, human feelings of guilt, human feelings of responsibility, human feelings that say no when it comes to the commission of a crime or some act of violence against another human being, and you can just gradually wear great big calluses on that conscience. There won't be any conscience left. Well, that's what we're doing. We're wearing calluses on our conscience and then looking around and wondering who in the world is guilty for crime. I see I haven't even gotten to my series in the book of Jeremiah where I was going through to talk about some of the prophecies that foretold the way our people would be. But you know, the one statement in the second chapter of Jeremiah is, verse 17, "Have you procured this unto yourself, in that you have forsaken the Eternal your God when he led you by the way?" The point is, domestic crime is not necessarily the fault of some other nation. It's America's private family problem. And now we face an enemy from within which threatens to bring us down. We have a booklet about crime. It's called Crime Can Be Stopped. Here's how. Now, that title doesn't imply that you, by doing something all by yourself, can simply stop all this crime wave. You know better than that. But you can certainly stop you from doing something which is criminal. And you can certainly have a lot of help if you write for that booklet about your children and how to prevent crime where children are concerned. And if you haven't yet written for my book that I wrote on child rearing, The Plain Truth About Child Rearing, and you ought to write for that as well. They're both absolutely free of charge. Remember, there is absolutely no advertising. There is no charge. There is no request for money in the literature. And all you need to do is to request it by sending your letter to Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. We need that. That's all. There is no cost, but tell us the name of the radio station to which you've been listening, the call letters, and then send your letter to Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO, Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO, Sydney, New South Wales.